Blog Talk Radio.
How to keep up the blazer, loosen up the tie, step aside, the kitchen timer is alive. Sports City, let's go.
Okay, Thomas, slow down. The call in number is 929-477-2759. We got you locked and loaded into the kitchen. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but you are here with us, Steph. I have my co-host with me. Aaron is in the building. Welcome to the show. How are you feeling this evening?
Well, first of all, good evening to yourself. And as always, super excited. Highlight of my week. The fact that it's a Friday just happened to be icing on the cake. I am ready for this weekend for many reasons. And we got a lot of great stuff to talk about tonight, too. So I'm excited for that.
Okay. So I'm going to try and get into this first topic. We already got callers here already. So I don't know what it is, Ms. G, but you got people here already. I don't know if they're here for you. The kitchen is lining up. I'm going to try my best to get us started. I got Skypers, too, so people, let me get you cooking first, and I'm going to get you in. Just give me a good 30 seconds to a minute, please. I'm going to get you guys in here. Aaron, I'm now because we had a show going. Now everybody coming here for you, so we hot. Okay, so
bring it
first
on.
And foremost,
I'm right.
First and foremost, we're going to go all around the sports spectrum as much as possible, Sports City. I might have to talk to the people upstairs and see if we can get more time on the board. Well, I haven't talked to you in a while. Your thoughts on the World Series? The Nationals went into Houston and stole games 6 and 7 up against Verlander and Cole again. And this is the startling thing about this is that I have never seen a series where no home team had an advantage, like, at all. Like, nobody had no ground. The fans didn't mean crap. Your strong pitcher didn't mean nothing. Your best batter didn't mean nothing. Everything was for naught, and it was like Houston showed up in D.C. one games. What was it, 3, 4, and 5? It was like all they had to do was go shut the door. Verlander was going crazy in the dugout. Like, he knew he had it in the bag. They went to Houston. Nationals was like, wait, hold on. I don't know what you're thinking about. Like, we do this. Like, we come around and we taking the pie out of people's plate, you know? So your thoughts on this World Series, I'm not going to lie. This has to be the most historic World Series that I've ever seen on what happened. All 7 games, and it went 7 games. That's the craziest part about this, too. Your thoughts, and I'll get the callers in here as well.
Well, it's interesting you bring up how crazy it is in terms of the home field advantage, because it literally made history. So you are correct in bringing up it being referred to as a historical event, because it did make history in that. In the entire history of the World Series, there has never, ever been a team in the playoffs to win 4 road games and win a series. So the Nationals did make history by doing that. And you think about it, that's pretty unbelievable, considering the World Series is one of the oldest, if not, I believe, the oldest championship. It has not changed its title or had any sort of mergers. Obviously, it's grown, but we're going back well over, 100 years here. So that just shows you how difficult it is to do and how unbelievable it was. But with that being said, I do believe that there is someone, I don't know if you can remember who it is, Ty, but I was a game off, did expect Washington to pull it off. I thought they'd pull it off in 6. I was shocked that they did not win a single home game, which is why I was calling for 6 games. But They made me look good, gave up a couple runs early. But I just think this, you know, I noticed while watching the series, all the T-shirts and everything, most of the teams and the fans were wearing, I think they said, finish the fight. And you just really got that sense about this team that they were not going to give up, that they were scrappy. And that's the type, kind of team I myself love to watch. I think that they probably inherited, I guess, a lot of support and a lot of fans as a result of what had happened with Houston and the reporters, especially that it occurred during a time where we are so, it is such a hot topic of debate when you come to things like domestic violence and stuff like that. So I know a lot of individuals who also became invested just based on that. And we're very pro-Washington. I think we're all sick of some of the politics coming out of there. We're not getting into that. But it just seemed like this team was put there. They, you know, came together at the right time, and they were not going to be denying the series. And I felt that before the series. I called them to win it. And even when they got down early, I just had a feeling that they were going to rally, that it's almost like that's what type of team they are. They need a reason. They feed off of adversity. And so being down, it's almost like it wakes them up. And I'm with you, though, on the fact that nothing went as scripted as well, which is what I think makes a great series. It all goes as planned. Cole goes in. We have a snooze fest. He shuts everybody down. You know, it's a 1-0 game or something like that. No one wants to see that for seven games or, you know, however many games in the World Series. I think the other great thing about this was that it brought us everything. It had the bats, even if they were not the ones you expected. There was moments of brilliance with the pitching. You know, they had interest from, I guess I'd say, people who typically wouldn't watch the World Series, from what I've listened to and from what I've heard around at least our area, is that people were interested because it was Washington and all of the good stories that kind of came along with it. So,
well, here goes the crazy thing, and I want to get these callers in because it's loading up. I got a lot of callers in here, so I'm going to get them in. And the one thing that I want to address to you too, I'm going to get them in here, is I want to know how you and other people feel, like how Bryce Harper is feeling at this point in time. But first and foremost, I'm going to get the Skype caller in. Calling in via Skype, welcome to the Aaron and Timeless Show. What's your name? What's on your mind tonight? Oh, Skype
Hello?
Caller, are you there? Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
I can hear you.
Oh, awesome. Thanks. I just wanted to point out one of the things that made the series one of the greatest of all times. And I think a lot of credit that gets overlooked really needs to go towards, you know, a shining example would be the Chicago Blackhawks. Their base coaches, first of all, all of their base coaches have a long history, from the Blackhawks down to the
Blackhawks. I don't get that one. Okay, so I'm gonna get by that one. See, Aaron, see, you even got these people doing this. You got this happening. Look, we will get that. Okay, so let okay, that's one. We're gonna pass by one. Okay, calling in from the 310. Welcome to the Aaron and Timeless Show. What's your name? What's on your mind tonight?
Hey guys, it's Tom. How you doing?
Good.
How
Tom,
you doing,
how are you?
Tom?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I mean, I think you know, It was a really, really amazing series, I think, because, you know, I think because baseball is not nearly as popular of a sport as it has been in the past, that this Astros team has kind of gone under the radar for just how absurdly dominant and talented that they are. You know, I know there's been a lot of World Series championship teams. You've seen, like, the Red Sox, you know, but this Astros team, it to me is very comparable to those, like, late 90s Yankees teams that we used to see where it was just top to bottom. Every hitter was terrifying, able to win. I think anytime you get to watch a series like that, that's kind of those, like, the Astros probably win this thing 9 out of 10 times. They maybe win this thing 18 out of 20 times, you know. Like, anytime you get to see something where the unlikely outcome occurs, I think that's exciting to see. I think the Bryce Harper thing, I don't know. I mean, look, I think on one end, he probably professionally doesn't feel great right now. But, you know, like Scrooge McDuck, he can just take a dive into his pool of $400 million.
I understand that they all play this game for money. They all are going to get those, especially his star caliber. He's going to get $100 million or three, I think it's close to four, three or $400 million, right? Close to that, right? So, of course, you're going to see that type of money. But if you look at the situation, he left, they won the World Series, you look like you're the problem. Like, that's what it looks like. And don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not trying to say Bryce Harper's the problem, you know, but Bryce Harper, you know, he had his little brushes with injuries and things of that nature. But it just bothers them that, you know, a player of his caliber and looking at his buddy Chris Bryant, because Chris Bryant was one of the, to me, I think he was the face of that organization that won the World Series with the Cubs. And knowing that they came up together out there in Vegas, you know, you would want to see him try to win something. He took the I don't really want to even call it the high road, but took the money road, if you will, went to Philadelphia, a rival within the division, and not only did he go to the rival, but the Phillies didn't look great this season, and Washington said, you know what, well, we're going to do what we need to do here, and everybody bought in. And listening to what Aaron just said about, or not even, well, both of you said it at the same time, looking at how strong of a caliber of a roster that the Houston Astros had, whether if you're looking at the offense with the lineup that they have or looking at the pitching rotation, they look like they were, you know, this is David and Goliath right here. And Goliath was really, they had home field advantage. It got taken away from them. They went to Washington and took the cake right out of their hands. And it was like Washington has all the pressure on them to just try to go into Texas and compete because they got to deal with a Charger Verlander. And the one stat that kills me right now looking at this is, Verlander does not have a World Series win at all, and he has a ring. Like, that's the crazy part. So every time he's been here, whether when he was in Detroit and he was losing, or he was in that first situation when they won 2 years ago, he didn't get a win there. And then this one, he got beat twice. Like, what's going on with Justin? Like, I know he's getting older. I don't want to say if he's lost the tooth, but these situations all occur. And meanwhile, he would have been a right-handed pitcher going up against a left-handed batter in Bryce Harper. That's even bigger in itself there. Bryce missed these opportunities going up against a loaded right-handed rotation in the Houston Astros. So,
I think there's a couple things to take from this. One, I think, look, if this is an argument, like, let's say if Kyrie Irving, when he left the Celtics, if the Celtics somehow win the title this year, that is a massive indictment on Kyrie Irving, right? Because basketball is more of a team sport. There's less players. Baseball, I think the thing with it is that as much as we want it to pretend like it's a team sport, the reality is there's fielding and you need to do that, but it's a series of one-on-one battles one after another, right? Like it'd be like if basketball was just every play, and I mean like James Harden is kind of like this anyway, but like if every play was basically like, all right, everyone clear off the court and these guys are going to go one-on-one and we're going to do this with every player and we're going to rotate it, right? I think the reality is just like I'm a Dodger fan, right? And the year we got Manny Ramirez, which I think was 2000, I don't remember, I think it was 2007. He took all those steroids and he put on a batting performance like I've never seen in my life. The guy was batting like 560. It's the only time I've ever seen a batter on a baseball team like almost single-handedly beat teams in a series. Unless you're Barry Bonds, unless you're one of these like you walk every time, so you get on base every time, like individual batters can't really, like, you know, you replace, Bryce Harper is good, but the reality is that the Nationals were able to spread that money around, and like maybe that's what helped them win. I can't, as much as I think as convenient as it is to kind of blame Harper, and as bad as he probably feels, the reality is just that if Bryce Harper's on this team, you know, I don't think they have that much better of a chance to win again. But I you know, you got to give credit to this team. Like, it was really cool to see. I mean, I gave them zero chance to beat the Astros. I mean, especially they beat Cole and Verlander on the road. I mean, it's impressive.
Yeah.
It's impressive.
Yeah, twice.
Twice.
Well, that's why
twice.
Tyrone.
Yeah.
That's why you thought I was crazy. Tyrone was telling me I was nuts for picking Washington because no way Cole loses twice. But it's funny about the Bryce Harper. It was just you had a feeling about this team. I think too, there's a lot to be said. You know, they were used to the underdog role. They were not even, you know, they were not supposed to be there. They weren't supposed to win the series they won. So it wasn't anything new. And I think that does definitely give you confidence as a team when you beat teams that are on paper better than you or have better records. And I think there's a lot to be said for chemistry, for team chemistry, for confidence and what that can do and how that can change or elevate a player in situations. It won't last for the course of a season, but over seven games, you know, that's what makes these things great. And that's what gives the underdogs chances to win. That's what gives these teams. And, you know, the interesting thing too that I liked about it is, yes, Houston is stacked. They are the Goliath of baseball. You know, going up against Washington and David. But what was cool is if you kind of flip the script and look at them as cities overall, you know, Washington is this huge, major, I know they're not a city, but D.C. is massive. It's a massive market in every sense of the word. And Houston's definitely a smaller market. And usually it's the bigger markets that have these big stack teams. And with Bryce Harper, you know, it's funny because I thought of him almost immediately. I was watching the end of the game, and my first thought was, wonder what Bryce Harper is doing right now and how he's feeling. And I don't think you can say that – I never occurred to me, Ty, honestly, that it was to think of him in that way because he may be exposed or would have been exposed as the problem of the team that they won after he left. When – I felt like it was more kind of just, you know, man, I could be a part of that team. What a great moment. What a cool team, as we've all agreed on. It's going to go down in history as one of the great World Series. And, you know, I think that at the end of the day, though, you know, if you can have a player like Bryce Harper, you have a player like Bryce Harper. Your overall, it's going to be better. I think if anything, it may have exposed that perhaps his attitude or his persona was part of the problem, that maybe, you know, without him there, it became more of a team focus. It wasn't all about Bryce Harper, especially last year. What is he doing? Where is he going? That becomes more of a team. It's not just one person all of the time, but, you know, in baseball, and I think he got greedy. I just think, you know, I'm not one to turn down money, but when you're talking about, you know, $350 million versus $400 million, that to me, it's just such a ridiculous amount of money that I would like to think no one's that greedy or that reckless with money that they could ever even spend it all in many lifetimes. But, you know, it depends on his reason for leaving. But in sports, you know, people forget he was not making a lot of money before he signs this massive contract. And I know a lot of athletes, you know, I spend a lot of time around them, and most of them, you know, and there's nothing wrong with it. The motto is kind of is like, first you get that contract, you take care of your family, you set yourself up for life, you get that contract, then you get the ring, then you take the pay cuts, then you do this, then you go where you need to go to win. So, you know, it just made me wonder. And once I started thinking about that, I guess, you know, like you said, I didn't feel so bad for him because at the end of the day, he's still, what, 25 years old. He has many, many chances. Now he has his piles and pools of money so he can do whatever he wants, go wherever he wants, as long as, you know, teams want him and he continues to perform. But I think any team if they could afford or take a Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper called and said, hey, I want to come and play for you. You know, you're not going to shut the door in his face. And I don't think that they would have had less a chance to win this year with him on the team. I think it just, it all came together at the right time.
Well, I know they wouldn't shut the door in his face or something like that, but this is the one thing that I do think about. I don't think he has a great amount of time to get it done because the Phillies have a lot of rebuilding to do before I think they win the National League. Like, I still look at the Dodgers as a powerhouse, regardless if they do keep falling short, whether it's in the NLCS or the World Series. They're still a team that you got to reckon with. I feel weary about Clayton Kershaw, but that's a whole other discussion on the way I feel about the Dodgers. I still feel like the Brewers can present themselves to be a tough team or a tough out in the National League. The Phillies are in the driver's seat in the National League. And here goes the crazy thing about all the sports. I'm not even just talking baseball, but baseball is probably the most relevant thing that I could talk about in this retrospect. We're all talking about the money that he received. Think about everybody that hit that top-notch number of money that they received from a team at that point in time where they were at one of the top, you know, the pinnacles of their career, and they've all fallen short. I can think back about 10 or 11 years ago when everybody tried to go to the Angels, when it was C.J. Wilson, when it was Albert Pujols. There's another pitcher that I'm missing. They all went to the Angels and thought that they were going to stack up, load up the Angels, and everybody fell on their face, including Pujols. It's like Pujols just started waking up now, and Pujols is nearing the end of his career. Then you think about Miguel Cabrera. Miguel Cabrera got hot in that World Series run, and they fell short up against the I think it was the Giants, if I'm not mistaken, when the Tigers lost that way, I swear. And he ended up getting that $300 million contract. Where you haven't even heard that much of Miguel Cabrera. I mean, he gets to the plate, you got to respect him. But at the end of the day, he's not clutching the ball like he was at that point in time in 2010 or before that. And now the one thing that I'm worried about, even though he's not on the team that I love or like, but I'm looking at Mike Trout the same way. Because when Trout is done with that, you know, like when he gets the turnaround, do you think the Angels are going to be back in the same situation? Or are they going to be still, you know, in the cellar in the AL West? So this is something I'm looking at. And then looking at Bryce, I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, they get to count a whole bunch of money at the end of the day. But, you know, everybody that plays sports wants to get that hardware and bring it home or wear a ring around their hometown or around their own home. Hell, they don't even have to wear it around their hometown. But that's just something that they play the game for, is to be a champion at the end of the day. I mean, of course, they're all going to be loaded rich at the end of the day. But I want to get past money. Like, I don't like to talk about dough at the end of the day. You know, I watch a lot of analysts try to talk about how much they're pulling in a year, so on and so forth. No, I like to talk about the essence of the game and what makes this thing go round. But that's just me.
Well, the ironic thing is, Ty, the answer to your question or the proof in the pudding that he has plenty of time, so to speak, is in the Houston Astros. Because we all forget, you know, now athletes are just playing. Baseball was already a sport where athletes could play later into their 30s on a more frequent basis before you started seeing all these athletes now doing it in all these other sports that may have more wear and tear on the body in certain ways. So he is still very, very young. So, I mean, I think he still will get better. I think that some of the guys – I think Pujols was a little bit older. He had already had so many massive, massive years with the Cardinals. He had won his rings. You know, LA is a whole different ballgame than Philadelphia. So, but the Astros are the proof that, you know, let's say Bryce Harper has his 10 years. I believe in this decade, the Astros started out, they were so bad that I might be off a little bit on the number, but they lost something like 364 games in 3 years, in a three-year span. So you do the math, and that's, you know, over 120 losses a year. They were dismal, terrible, bottom dwellers for, you know, considered a win before you showed up for many years. And as we've already talked about, you know, fast forward a few years, they are now and have been for the last 3 years, with one ring to show and a second appearance here, that they are stacked. They are the team. They'll probably be the team to beat as long as the roster remains similar and players continue to perform the way they have been. So that shows you right there that it can be done in the time frame these guys are working with. you know, it's not a guarantee, but, you know, if a team is smart and does the right thing financially, and I would hope and think that Philly, even though they spent that much money when they brought Harper there, had a plan, or at least, you know, knew that to build around him, they're going to have to continue to open up the pocketbook. And I do think that will happen. And I would imagine that's probably even something that was discussed during the negotiations. Because like I said, it's just, I mean, money, it's once you're talking over $350 million, I'm not going to say I don't see a difference, or $40 million doesn't make a difference. But to me, then it makes me think there's another reason that he left. So, and that Philadelphia must have, other than the money, also, you know, not made guarantees, but for lack of a better word, you know, made promises to them that they'll keep.
Okay, so we're going to get away from that because I feel like we cooked that pretty well, but I do want to get into a lot of crazy stuff that has been going on, especially on the gridiron. There's a team that's keeping pace with your Patriots right now in the San Francisco 49ers that took care of business yesterday in Arizona, winning a close one, 28-25. I really thought that if the Niners would have ended up giving the ball back to the Cardinals could have did something epic. But Jimmy Garoppolo was off to an excellent game that he played in throwing passes on the money, hitting Emmanuel Sanders, and then he's building, you know, consistency with these guys at an alarming rate. And he just got back after coming off of a season-ending injury. His defense is getting that rush going, and they were actually getting to Kyler Murray and knowing how fast and quick and elusive he is. This San Francisco Niners team, they are for real. I can't even just say they're just legit. For them to pull this one off is big, but I want to see if, you know, the next time they go up against the Rams and the next time they go up against the Seahawks, because right now they are in the driver's seat in all of the NFC at this point in time. Your thoughts on this Niners team and the impression that Jimmy G is leaving on this league right now, especially with him using, I want to say it like this, using the Patriots and Brady as a driving force, because he was the one that went to Belichick and saying that he can be better than Brady, and they're both undefeated at this point in time. Your thoughts on
that? Well, first of all, the NFL must be just be salivating over the potential developing storyline of a Brady-Garoppolo Super Bowl. I mean, can you imagine how much fun they would have playing that up in the weeks leading up to the game? So I definitely think that – I think everyone's motivated at, and – especially when it comes to the Patriots. It come with a little extra oomph than they would against a regular opponent. It's kind of like Serena Williams once said that she doesn't really get any easy matches or easy days because every opponent she plays, they know they're coming to play Serena. So she gets the best or the best attempts and best efforts of every player, every match she plays. And I think that the Patriots are similar to that in that teams are going to show up or work extra hard. They know that any win against them is a statement win, and it's a big deal. And I think people love to hate on the Patriots, especially have to love the people who like to hate on them and don't really have any reason why. They just like to jump on that bandwagon. But I think Garoppolo is definitely driving that bandwagon and would love a chance to kind of show, but he wouldn't really be showing Belichick because stories that were coming out at that time were that part of the rift was that Belichick agreed with him and thought that he was going to be very good and valuable and did not want to get rid of him. That hence the story is saying Brady and Kraft ran him out of town. I think it was just a case where you had a valuable asset who clearly was not going to sit on the bench for another 10 years and the best quarterback of all time making it clear that he was going to play for another 10 years. But I just think the media loves to make a big story out of nothing sometimes. And I think they did a good job with this. And I think it's probably clipboard material for Garoppolo in his head every time he plays, every time he reads stories about the Patriots, Tom Brady. And I think that he is showing that he can play like them. And Arizona does not have a very good pass defense. I know Patrick Peterson is a perennial Pro Bowler, but they have not been defending well against the pass this year. But in spite of that, I think people are saying that that's why he put up good numbers. He should. But if they really were paying attention, it was some of the throws he was making. I mean, right on the money. Beautiful throws, even on some of the plays that were well defended. So he came out looking very good last night on another big nationally televised game that people are watching. I think that the only, I guess, real negative to take away from the game, if you're San Francisco, is just like you said, that had the Cardinals gotten the ball back, it very well would have gone to overtime, or they would have won the game. And I do think for San Francisco to threaten for the Super Bowl, that defense has to continue to play maybe not as well as it had played the last week or two, because that's just a level that is ridiculous. But that defense has to continue to play very, very well and cannot be giving up 28 games or 25 points a game, expecting the offense to consistently put up a lot of points every game. I don't think the offense is that good. I guess they still have something to prove to me. I think Sanders is a great addition, not just because it gives Garoppolo another weapon, but because he's a veteran. He is hungry for that ring, really hungry. He doesn't have a lot of time. He rehabbed, worked really hard to come back and play this season, and obviously made it clear in Denver that he wanted to play for a winner. So I think he brings a lot more to this team and this offense than just his ability on the field. But I do not think that the offense is at a place where they can carry this team to and through the Super Bowl. So I would be a little concerned that, they went to Arizona and the game, especially because they were out in front, that the team came back. And I give Kyler Murray credit. I know he didn't play great. I know he missed a wide open and potential scoring play. But at the end of the day, he's a rookie. He's a young rookie, I think. Is he 21 yet? Maybe, if that. And he's still learning, and this defense has proven to be probably the second best defense in the league. And he held his own. You can tell he's a gamer. You can tell that he doesn't get scared, that he's not afraid, that he wants to be out there, but he's a rookie. He's going to make mistakes. So I actually, if I was an Arizona fan, in spite of the loss, would be feeling pretty good. And in spite of some questionable plays or not the outcome they wanted, that Kyler Murray, to me, proved something last night. And that I think he can really live up to some of the hype. I don't know if anyone can live up to all of the hype that he came with, but that by far to me, it was one of his more impressive games.
He's doing just fine. Yeah. I mean, he's doing just fine, especially with what he has right now. You got to think, they don't have a strong receiving core, and he was making things happen with what he has right now. And to me, and I'm just doing this personally, I mean, out of the gate, the first game they played was up against the Lions, and they ended up with a tie. Either way, I didn't want to see the Lions lose, but then looking at Kyler Murray's situation, I do want to see him off to a good start, because I don't want to see Larry Fitzgerald sent off in a bad note. Like, I want them to finish at least over 500, at least give him that type of season. I don't want it to be another, let's just say, best-case scenario, 7-9 season, and he leaves the league. Like, Larry Fitzgerald is too much class, too much of an NFL legend. I can give him so many accolades and great names, and he's one of the players that I don't hate on. You know what I'm saying? Like, because I know what Larry Fitzgerald brings to the game.
Knowing what
Kyler has with him, and knowing that he had an 88-yard pass play, not to Fitzgerald, to Andy Isabella, that nobody knows, and it was one of those home run passes where this guy was off and running and had the defense guess which way he was running. Like, that play, Kingsbury drew up so well to, catch the Niners off guard, and it put them right back in the game. So it's like, all they have to do is get a stop, and here go Jimmy G. third down after third down, just getting completion after completion. And that the backbreaker was a situation where he was, you know, about to scramble or whatever. And when he starts scrambling, he scrambles, and they think that he's about to try to pick up the first down. He stops right before the marker and just throws a pass right to one of the tight ends. I'm missing his name right now, but it's number 82. And he caught the pass and completed the first down. And, you know, the game, you know, was finalized as soon as they got the ball back and took a couple of knees. And the game was out of reach. But I give the Niners a ton of credit on what they were able to do to go into Arizona and steal this game, let alone not let Murray get more comfortable and confident, because he's already scoring from deep. They scored an 88-yard touchdown. I think that he knew that he could move that ball. He could scramble and make things happen on the fly. He's getting comfortable. The way that I see Kyler Murray's progression happen is the same way that you need to worry about this Sunday, Aaron, about Lamar Jackson, because as soon as they're getting comfortable, they not only figure out where the rush is coming, if their guys are defended, but they'll pick up the 7 to 11-yard scrambling and leave that linebacker on an island and make you pay. So this is what Kyler was actually, you know, putting in front of the Niners, that the Niners had to worry about later in the game instead of earlier. And it's bad and sad that he's a slow progressor, you know, like he has to get through the lumps of the first and second quarter to get warmer within the game. So I tip my hat to Kyler Murray for what he's been able to do. You got to think that he's already putting wins up on the board. And this Arizona Cardinal team was the number one pick in the draft on how poorly they played last year. So I was truly pleased with what I seen with the Cardinals. Like I said, if the Niners would have ended up having the punt, we would have needed more popcorn for this game, because it might have went to overtime, or we would have seen a thrilling end to the Niners' run at this point in time. One more thought quickly before I get away from this game. Does Nick Bosa win Rookie of the Year?
I mean, if he keeps playing the way he's played the last couple of weeks, and it depends on the Niners. They keep this up and they come away with a 14-win season, and defense is largely the part of it. That or it depends on what happens with the Gardner Minshew situation. But you definitely have some good candidates this year. And I do have one quick question for you. Does Larry Fitzgerald, considering, like you said, Kyler Murray is not just a slow starter in games, but I think it was kind of known that when he was taken number one, that this was not going to be an overnight thing, that this would be a progression. And I think the fans, the organization, and everyone understood that and was behind that. And then you have Cliff Kingsbury, who kind of came out of nowhere, out of left field, as the head coach his first year. I think some of maybe the early struggles Murray's having in games could also have to do with the fact that he's also doing it with a rookie, very, very young, very inexperienced head coach who's struggling with play calling and managing the games and the times and everything and being responsible for it. So if they can pull out some more wins and play these good teams tough and get to a favorable record, do you think you could see Larry Fitzgerald reconsidering coming back one more year with his head coach and his quarterback being one year more into the league and having the experience?
The selfish me, the personal me, without a doubt. I would love to see him come back and get this thing turned back around. I don't feel and this is the selfish part about me too. I'm going to say this. I don't feel it's fair to Kyler Murray that he gets 1 year of Larry Fitzgerald and Larry walks out of the game. It's like, I'm getting used to this guy, and he's probably one of the best possession receivers that this game has seen. Like you could put Rice and T.O. and Moss in the conversation, but those guys aren't really possession receivers. These guys were basically home run hitters. Rice could be a possession receiver, but Rice is so many different intricate things. Moss was a home run hitter. Like, that's why I love Moss the best out of all of them. Because Moss could get to the house now. Like, T.O. could too, but T.O., it was something about T.O., especially when he started alligator arming, it removed me from the conversation. But T.O.'s still an ultimate great and legend and Hall of Fame player. I can't take that away from him. But at the end of the day, it's like I still put Rice and Moss ahead of him. However, I do it. I do 1A, 1B with them. And it's like, Now looking at Larry Fitzgerald, he's been able to do it with the Arizona Cardinals. That team has never really been great. I mean, they've gone as far as getting to the postseason. They've been to the Super Bowl once, and that was with Larry Fitzgerald, and he damn near scored the game-winning touchdown until Ben had that critical last-minute drive to win the game back at the end zone for San Antonio Holmes. Like, he did everything that he could, so it's like, if this is what I'm saying, I'm being selfish and personal. If I could see, like, 2 or 3 years of him playing with Kyler Murray, then I'd be like, okay, I'm content now. But it's like, I know Larry's been playing for, I think, 15 years now and doing everything that he can. He's even coming up with big possessions and taking big hits, like, and still getting right up and giving the ball to the referee, like so selfless, and his personality is great. It's like, I want to see him out there. I don't know. I it's truly based on him. Like he still looks like he could. Well, he still can play. I don't want to say he looks like. He still can play ball in this league and make defenses worry about him. But it's all up to him and his family, and you know how he moves from here.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think a lot of it rides on his relationship with Kyler Murray. I could see him coming back as long as, one, like you said, which he is, he's still contributing. He's clearly, you know, not Larry Fitzgerald at the peak of his career. No one would be, but he is absolutely a huge asset still to that team, would be to any team, not just for what he can do on the field, but for what he brings off the field. And especially, like you said, when you have a young quarterback like Kyler Murray, who has all of the talent in the world. And imagine if you could combine Kyler Murray's physical talent with the person and who, you know, Larry Fitzgerald character and work ethic and who he is, what the potential there could be. And it is something that is exciting. And Fitzgerald knows probably better than anybody that you don't have to, all it takes is one season. It doesn't even take a season. You've got to get to the playoffs, and then you've got to string together and get hot, just like these Nationals just did at the right time. And the Cardinals, I think, you could look at it a couple of ways. If they lose a lot of these games, maybe close, play well in spurts, but get a high draft pick, or they finish with a record that indicates they'll be in playoff contention next year. I don't know which would be better, but either way, I could see Fitzgerald giving it one more shot. And I could see the organization especially essentially getting on their knees and begging him to come back and mentor Kyler Murray. And think of all the young receivers they drafted in this last draft with so much potential, but they were raw and young. So he, you know, get him one more year with them. And clearly Fitzgerald loves this organization, takes pride in it, and he knows he's helping them build, not just to have one good year that he could be a part of, but that he could be helping to build something that could be great for a very long time. So I'd love to selfishly love to see him stick around unless he's leaving because of health reasons, and, you know, then definitely do what you need to do to take care of yourself.
Okay. Fair enough. So that's one game I want to get out of the way. So now it's time to get to the nitty-gritty, first and foremost, of what's happening in your own backyard. The Patriots have released Gordon, and he's been picked up that fast off of the waivers by the Seahawks, in which it's like, I got to give the Seahawks credit because they are not wasting time to try to put pieces around Russell Wilson, because Russell has been doing a lot of this stuff, you know, shouldering a lot of the load out there in Seattle and trying to give him piece after piece. I mean, DK Metcalf, he's working because he's a rookie. You got Tyler Lockett, who's probably the best home run hitter in the game right now. But other than that, it's like he's trying to, you know, do this on-the-fly work-in-progress situation. And for them to get Gordon and seeing how he can try and come back and be healthy, a big piece to this team, and try to make him get a run at the Niners. I mean, the Niners are running away with this division. Well, not to say running away, because I think it's 2 games back, if I'm not mistaken. But still, yeah, they are staying ahead as best as possible. So Russell has to compete somewhat with the pieces that he has. Your thoughts with what the Seahawks have been able to do after the Patriots release Josh Gordon?
Well, I'm not surprised that he was picked up. I actually As you know, the Patriots are my team, and I didn't really love the decision to release him. I know that they had to once they placed them on the minor IR. But I guess, number one, in terms of the Seahawks, it makes sense to pick him up. It is very low risk. Don't have to invest a lot. If it doesn't work out, they can move on. I do agree that Seattle is trying to put the pieces around, and they are chasing San Francisco, but I think anyone in that division and everyone should know that that division is going to be tough for a very, very long time. Those teams are being mm-hmm. built not to be good just for a year or two. Those teams are being built for the long run and to be good for a very long time. So I think that Josh Gordon has so much upside, tons of it. He's a big physical receiver. He's proven he can play number one receiver. He can put up gaudy numbers on bad teams. He did it on horrible, you know, those terrible Browns teams. And he still would probably be, for what his ceiling is, a player you could get for a very reasonable price and wouldn't take a huge hit against the team salary cap. But on the New England side of things, like I said, I was not on board with the release. I think a guy as talented as Josh Gordon, I understand that they have not, I've seen him drop some balls. I've seen, you know, I think he needed to play better. He had not been playing very well. But again, for a player with such a high ceiling, it kind of tells me that something maybe was amiss behind the scenes. First of all, I want to make it clear, I hope and I support Josh Gordon and hope that everything he's doing has been going well. I think obviously it looks like it has. I think it's awesome. And, you know, every week that he showed up, he showed that he's serious, that he's taking this, you know, second, third chance he's gotten seriously. Seems to be working hard. It's unfortunate that it hasn't yet paid off on the field, but I don't know. Something just tells me that maybe there's something going on that we weren't aware of or something going on behind the scenes, because I just don't understand the Patriots walking away from a player who has such a high ceiling and who, you know, that's something that they just, a position they just traded for. And I understand they did just trade for a position and a player in Sanu like Josh Gordon, but with all these injuries we've seen this year, I don't think it hurts to be deep at that position. And N'Keal Harry, again, has a lot of upside, but he cannot be relied on for, you know, he hasn't even played a snap in the NFL. So I wonder if something was going on, but I also just throw it out there that I hope that everything is okay with Josh Gordon with the move, that it goes smoothly for him. I wish him success in Seattle. I know it's a big deal to, you know, just kind of up and move across the country, and that can be a stressful situation. So I do just want to throw it out there that I hope it goes well for him, and I hope he continues to succeed and gets to play a few more years in the NFL, because he certainly is a great talent. And
okay, we may have lost Aaron due to technical difficulties. I can't even speak. I'm going to try and hold it down until she gets back in the building. What I see with the Seahawks team, like, I feel like they can be competitive within the NFC West. I think that they're a team that could actually hang on and probably pull a wild card if the Niners remain hot. It depends on if they don't get stumped by the Rams, because I feel like the Rams, they got stronger as they lost some of their critical players. First, Clay Matthews broke his jaw, rid of Marcus Peters, and now Keith Tlaib is on the IR. They just got rid of him and sent him to the Dolphins. So they got to worry about the Rams. The NFC West is going to be tough moving forward. Okay, we do have Aaron back. Aaron, I don't know where you may have left off or where I missed you at, but I'll let you continue, then I'll get to the other topic.
No, I mean, I heard you bringing up just the strength of the division and the Rams and some of the injuries they've had of late. And it it's good you brought that up, because the other thing I was going to point out about San Francisco is that it's all well and good now. I mean, they've earned their 7-0 record. They destroyed a very good Carolina team a week ago, but they haven't done anything in the playoffs in quite some time. And they're also a very young team with little experience. I know Richard Sherman will come in very handy, and they do have some good veterans. Tevin Coleman, I think, played in the Super Bowl with Atlanta. But the Rams, the Seahawks, they have that playoff experience. They know what to do. They know what it's like to be there, to play. And San Francisco, no matter what happens in the regular season, I did, you know, had not really bought into them. And then, of course, went with them this week and got a little nervous at the end there. But they've got to prove something in the postseason for me before I fully buy into this team. Seattle's done it. The Rams, I know they lost. The Super Bowl was a mess, but they've proven that they can win in the postseason, and they've taken a step forward every year. So I do think San Francisco might show its youth come playoff time, but I think those three are going to be battling it out, and throw in Arizona. That division's going to be a dogfight for the next decade or so.
Okay. The next topic that I do have, and I feel just as bad as this person that I felt about where I feel in the Keystone State, and that was in the beginning of this season, Ben Roethlisberger went out for the remainder of the season doing something to his elbow. I think it's more or less along the lines of Tommy John's situation, but he's pondering the retirement. I don't know if he said anything this year about a retirement, but he's getting closer to the end of his career. We're looking at the same situation happening in Denver, in which Joe Flacco has not looked good all season. They have one win, and to me, the face of that organization, to me, is Philip Lindsay, and I love the Philip Lindsay story. If you haven't seen it, please go watch it on YouTube. Awesome story. You may shed a tear, but that's beside the point, right? Joe Flacco has just been put on the IR for a herniated disc. Enters Brandon Allen. Is this the end of Joe Flacco's career, especially with him being uprooted out of Baltimore by Lamar Jackson, who Lamar is looking excellent with this offense? And now you bring in Brandon Allen, especially in this game up against the Cleveland Browns. If Brandon Allen could have any effect in this game, they probably won't need Joe Flacco's services. So will this be the end of his career, or will he just be a steady backup until he really knows that he can't play in the league? Your thoughts on Joe Flacco, or Joe Cool? Well, I don't really want to call him Joe Cool because that's Joe Montana, but Joe Flacco.
Now, I wonder if I did not see all of the game on Sunday. I saw his press conference. They do have two wins. I wonder if the timing is just what it is, just interesting timing, but that has to be mentioned, the way he went and just blatantly called out the coaching staff. It's one thing if you've been with the team, maybe if he had done it in Baltimore where he won a Super Bowl and he's been with the team for 10 years. But, you know, your first year in town, you've got guys like Von Miller and stuff around you. You yourself are quarterback, the most important position, and you're going to go and put your coaching staff on blast like that. And then you end up on IR. They did draft Drew Lock. I think that Flacco, ever since that day, has had a chip on his shoulder, and that maybe has had an effect on his play in Denver. I think he, you know, still had PTSD from the being run out of Baltimore situation, and here he is. He thinks he's found a home with his boy John Elway, and then boom, they go around and draft Drew Lock in the draft, in what I think the fourth round of the draft, making it clear that they believe he is the quarterback of their future. So I think we have seen the last of Joe Flacco in Denver. I think because of, depending on how bad his back is, I think there's so many teams right now that might need a serviceable quarterback. I don't think his ego would allow him to sign a contract as a backup, but I think now's the time to play the rookie anyway. I think the season's over. You are not going anywhere in that division. And I think there's probably only one playoff team, the division winner coming out of that division. So I think give the ball to Philip Lindsay. Like you said, he's the team's backbone. He's the team's heart. Give your rookie a shot. See what he can do. Give him, you know, half the year to learn without the pressure of having to win games. I mean, of course, there's pressure to win games, but it's not like he's taking over for a 6-2 team and he's got to sustain that winning. No, I think Flacco's gone. And like I said, the only way we see him somewhere else is if you're in a situation with a team that's ready to go but doesn't have that quarterback, or has a quarterback go down where they miss the season, something like that, an Andrew Luck situation where then he would be the starter. But I don't see him ever going anywhere again where he is not the guaranteed starter without a true, you know, with only a true backup backing him up. I think he's done with the being the veteran starter for the rookie backup, and his ego might get in his way, and sounds like his body is starting to give up on him. So we could have, I think, seen the loss of Joe Flacco. I don't think it would be a shock if he retired, maybe not right at the end of the year, but gave it some time and then walked away.
Okay, we're I don't know. I really feel like this may be the end of the road for him. If Brandon Allen has any success with this offense, there was a game or two ago where Flacco really looked like he wasn't even trying to complete passes. So as much as I supported Flacco, and you could ask James, I used to support him when he was with the Ravens in the run that they kept making the AFC Championship and losing, and he finally got that one win. He got the Super Bowl under his belt. It was like, okay, I supported him now. But now it's like, I feel like he's content. He doesn't really have that defense backing him and you know, having to win games to put up 21 points or 24 points. Like, it was good to see a Ravens team that could hold you to 13 and they'll win a game 17-13. Now he doesn't have that luxury anymore. And I want to say more or less longer in the tooth, if you will. So I really think this may be the end of the road for Flacco, especially with a herniated disc. He's going to have to use his back a lot. And I think a year or two ago, that was when he took the big hit from Kiko Alonso, too. So he's been taking his bumps as of late, too. I don't know if he needs to think about it, needs to talk to his family. But there's a lot on the line for Joe Flacco. I think this may be the end of the run for him. But it depends on how these quarterbacks look. It depends on how they look. If not, they may have to go back to number five. The next topic that I do have is Dwayne Haskins. Dwayne Haskins has been given the nod to start this week up against the Buffalo Bills. Do you think this is his time? I mean, do you think that he holds this down for the remainder of the season? Knowing that Case Keenum is there, knowing that Case Keenum is a playoff caliber quarterback out of the run that they had in Minnesota, but everywhere he's gone outside of Minnesota, he's looked questionable. Do you think they backtrack? Especially if he goes in, because this game is in Buffalo. If he looks bad in Buffalo, do they stick with him? Because Buffalo's defense has been playing well this season. Your thoughts on Dwayne Haskins running the show for the Redskins?
I actually feel very strongly that this was 100% the right call and that you stick with him no matter what. If he is absolutely getting torn apart to the point where he's physically really, really struggling, or it's just so bad that it's almost unfair to keep him out there, even if they have to pull him from a game because of that, I think they go back to him as a starter the next game, and they keep doing that because he's a kid, first of all, has very, very little playing experience overall, period, as a football player. He had a great season at that school, Ohio State, and did a great job there, but it was one season. It was, I think, 12 games. I think he started one season in high school as well. It shows you as well just the quality of athlete and what he's capable of right there. But I think what this kid needs is experience, and the only way to get it is to play him. I think this is actually a good situation. I'm not saying you want your first game to be at Buffalo against that defense coming off a game in which it got torn up by Philadelphia. that is not exactly the ideal circumstance to have your first official start. But I do think that he can go in there and play the rest of the season without pressure, knowing that the team is going to stand by him. I think it was very, very important that Bill Callahan went to Haskins in terms of declaring him his starter. He did it very quickly and with conviction. And I think that alone was a big deal because I think Haskins is going to need to know that he has this team behind him and that they want him out there, even during the bumpy times, because there are going to be some major bumps in the road this season going forward, especially considering it's not like he has many offensive weapons to work with. I think it's good that he'll have Peterson out there to, again, just kind of like we were talking about with Fitzgerald and Kyler Murray, but he really does not have a lot to work with. So I hope the team has kind of made it clear to him that his entire football life does not ride on this one game in Buffalo, but I think it's time to go with him. You got to get him out there. And I do believe that the more he plays, the better he will get. He probably, as most of us are, he learns as he does, you know. And I think the team will be that much better next year because of it. And I think that once they go with him as a starter, the absolute worst thing they could do would be to pull him. I think that would be something that could, you know, critically kind of mess up his mental status or his belief in himself. I think that if the team sticks with him and stands behind him, no, it can't really get much uglier. And Case Keenum played horrible football. When he went to the playoffs, yes, he did win, but he had a very, very good team around him. And I look at it as more that he didn't lose those games. But I don't know if you'd agree, but I definitely think that you go with him, you stick with him. Like I said, if it's a situation where it's really, really bad, embarrassing, dangerous, get him out of there, regroup for the game. I also don't think it's fair to judge on what he's done so far this season, because the only time he's played has been when his quarterbacks have gotten hurt. And again, at those times, the coach is almost making it clear, like, you are not my starter. There's three of them, and I'd rather start Keenum and Colt McCoy before I want to start you. So it's almost like he knew at that point for that coach, if he's going in, it's because they have no other choice. And imagine, you know, going in like that and you're not getting the first team reps. And that's why I think it was important that he know right away that I'm going to be the starter this week. He can kind of get in that mindset, get the reps in practice. And I wouldn't be shocked if he goes out and just, I don't think they'll win. I don't think he'll do anything incredible, but I do not think it's going to be as bad as people expect. You know, I, being from a Michigan alumni and huge fan, saw a lot of him last year, and the kid's got talent and the kid's got football smarts. So I think he'll just be just fine in the long run.
Okay. I don't know if you have anything, but I got one more distance. I'm talking about injuries and quarterbacks and things of that nature, but I'm getting away from the quarterback position. And I'm going to talk about a player that, I'm not going to lie, I may be a Detroit Lions fan. I'm a diehard Lions fan. But this player right here, I love dearly because of the person and the man that he is, and that is J.J. Watt. Three out of the last four seasons, this guy has had season-ending injuries, and he's not able to play. The beast of a guy that he is on the field, who makes defensive coordinators and offensive coordinators and offensive linemen fear what he can do defensively, is out again. I mean, I don't even know what to say. It's almost like, you know, you almost get emotional watching this guy because he's so selfless. He does so much for his community. Well, not his community. His communities, because also in Wisconsin, if you would have heard what happened this year when they played Green Bay in a preseason, or no, not even. It was like a scrimmage up there in Green Bay, and they actually had a day with the kids of Wisconsin. Everybody knows he's from Wisconsin. He went to school in Wisconsin. And the kid that he had a little black kid with him or whatever, and he's riding the kid's bike. Now, everybody knows JJ is 6'7" and like 308 pounds, solid. So he's riding the kid's bike. The kid's seat breaks. JJ took it personal. He got mad. He's like, I broke this kid's bike. Oh, it's about 100 kids out there. JJ turned around and bought every one of those kids a new bike, everyone, including the kid that he broke his seat. He brought him 2 bikes. So it's like, just knowing what type of guy this guy is, it's like, come on, like, I want to see him do well. And with Houston playing good ball at this point in time, they're going to be without him. Your thoughts on JJ Watt?
I couldn't agree with you more in terms of the type of guy he is. I would put him up, you know, when I think of him, there's very few players that I can think of in that light in terms of on and off the field. Maybe Larry Fitzgerald, who we just talked about. I mean, he's almost a defensive version. Such a good guy, genuine, lives a very, very good, clean, healthy, happy lifestyle. So he practices what he preaches, does anything he can for anyone he can. I know he was like that at Wisconsin as well. My brother was a student at the time he was there. And you hit the nail on the head. It was hard to watch the last 2 times it happened, especially knowing what it takes to come back from, I mean, those are major injuries, and not just to have to rehab and come back from it, but to do it to a level where you are, like you said, a game changer, a player that teams game plan around is remarkable. And so to see it happen this year when they are good, they have a chance to be really, really good. Deshaun Watson is that type of player that can take over a game and put his team on his back, especially with a J.J. Watt-led defense and, dare I say, upset a team like the Patriots or Kansas City, as they already have. So I think that makes it an even tougher pill to swallow. His tweet that he sent out as well, just kind of the fact to me, I also took out of it that he wanted his fans, and he knows people care and he appreciates it, and wanted to let us know what was going on with him. And just, I know we're going way over time. One more thing really quickly on it is I also think of the Jadeveon Clowney trade. I didn't fully understand it when it happened, especially in a day where pass rushers are such a valued position. I understand maybe he hasn't put up performances worthy of the number one overall pick. He's had injury issues, but now to me that's something that potentially really comes back to haunt them, because J.J. Watt is so good that they still can produce as a defense without Clowney, but I don't know that that defense can take a loss like J.J. Watt and still play with the best in the league, and some of these offenses that they're going to have to play to make a run in the playoffs. But overall, just as a person, it's painful, and it just sucks. Excuse my language, but there's no other way to put it, and it's the one thing that really stinks about sports is when things like this happen to great people. But at the same time, you know, there's so many awful things going on in the world. I think part of what makes him great is he realizes that he plays football, sport he loves for a living, and makes a ton of money doing that. I think he's either very happily engaged or newly married. And so the fact that he also points that stuff out and doesn't sit around and feel sorry for himself, I really love that about him.
Okay. Anything that you like to throw out here that we can try to dice up? If not, we could close up. We did go a little extra. We could push it if we want to. That's up to you.
Well, you know, I'm always happy to push it, but I've got a 12-year-old that I have to get back to who has a big playoff game tomorrow and is hungry.
Okay.
Just came home from a walkthrough. And I do really quickly, though, want to throw out that it was nice to see an NFL game last night, because I feel like it's becoming an epidemic where the kickers were not the main focus of the game, nor did they play a major role in the outcome of the game. So something we've been talking about a lot on the show this season on Fridays, and it was crazy last weekend to see not just missed kicks, but like not even close. And again, game winners and games and teams losing wins because of a missed extra point or field goal that's, you know, 33 yards, the length of an extra point. It's just, I really do think it's something that is going to start to become a big story in the NFL is these players giving up their bodies, giving up their health, killing themselves out there, putting their teams in positions, doing their jobs to win games. And then these major games being decided because they pushed the extra point line back, and apparently it made a big difference because the increase in missed extra points is enormous. And I'll just say it one more time. I really worry that it's going to continue to happen and that it's going to have just too much of an impact on the game. And I know you can't get rid of the kicker, but it is. It's almost heartbreaking sometimes. You can only imagine what's going through these guys' minds when, you know, they put themselves out there. They do everything they can, especially with these extra points. You know, I understand Chicago laid an egg, and it's – I don't even understand 90% of what they did that game. But the reality is they should have already been in overtime. That missed field goal, even though that would have won the game as well, shouldn't have been as big a factor because it should have been 17-17. But, you know, like I said, I've spent a lot of time on that. But just something to keep an eye on going forward, not just this year, but into the off season. It'll be interesting to see what some of these teams do. And maybe, too, you start to see a higher value placed on those kickers like Justin Tucker in Baltimore, who are very reliable and dependable. You know, they start to make more money or teams start to use draft picks to try and find these guys that not only have the legs, but the mental makeup, because I think part of it is, I don't know, some of these kids coming up in this millennial generation, even though I guess you could say I'm on that borderline. But they don't have the mental makeup. You know, they're better athletes, they have bigger legs, but not the mental makeup to go out in these pressure situations and make these kicks and win these games.
Fair enough. Like, I've been watching, it before you made the statement, but now sounds like somebody that agrees with me and is putting this back in perspective in the kitchen. And we're chopping this up. There's a lot of food for thought, but E, thank you for the show. Anything that you like to promote, shout out, close out with, please do so as we put the lid on this situation here at the Aaron and Timeless Show.
Just as usual, I just hope everyone has a fantastic weekend. I hope everyone enjoyed their Halloween. My son, Gardner Minshew, for the day, absolutely loved it. It was hilarious. Looked actually almost too much like him, considering he's only 12. But I hope everyone enjoyed the day, ate lots of candy, and aren't feeling too sick today. And then, of course, I just want to wish New Canaan 7 Red good luck tomorrow. They are playing their big rivals, Darien, in the playoffs in New Canaan. And my son, Michael, and the rest of the team have been practicing hard all week, watching film, and I just wish them luck, and hopefully they'll move on to the next round. But as usual, thank you so much for having me, and we'll have plenty to cook up and eat next week as well, as we always do.
For sure. Well, people stay tuned. We'll be back on air Sunday with the brunch. Early morning. This is a big weekend for me, sport wise and personally. Sport wise, tomorrow my Hurricanes and that rivalry go up against Florida State. I'm really hoping that we can go into Tallahassee and steal that game. That's going to be big. And Sunday, I'll let everybody know why it's big for me personally. It lands right on the brunch. But on that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the Chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know. Come on, NC, LA, Texas, Detroit, Chicago, Miami, LA.
for real niggas, no doubt. Get what's yours from out this fucker for your time run out. Get what's yours from out this fucker for your time run out. And get what's yours from out this fucker for your time run out. Welcome all you motherfuckers.
That's all I got. I'm gone.